Welcome, Sega fans, to the podcast that gives it all up for Sega. I'm Dan the Mega Driver, and I'm joined once again by my friend and co-host, the Lancia to my Toyota. It's James the Sega-holic. Mate, how you doing?
Very good, mate. Very good. Looking very grey under this light, it has to be said.
Me or you?
Well, mate, don't... You know, you've been using Just For Men, or you've just not started aging yet.
I don't.
Jesus Christ, man. What's the worst? You get a haircut. You see the silver falling on the robe. It's like, give me some colour, man. Oh, no. Well, good, mate. How's yourself?
Yeah, all right. I just started playing Final Fantasy VII Remake. I bought it with my rewards points vouchers that I got. Didn't want to spend real money on it. So I got
PC?
I got it on Xbox, but it's Play Anywhere, so I can play it on PC as well, and cloud if I want to. Play as cloud on the cloud. And I was just saying on X, I'm hot and cold on it so far, because it's one of those where you don't realise how much we've lost, I think, because obviously I've got my criticisms of Final Fantasy VII, but it's still a game that I've got a lot of fondness for. But you kind of just walk through and you tap the buttons to skip through the dialogue, blah, blah, blah. But this one, it was like a really long intro, and then you jump off the train and you go to fight someone and it stops. And then it's, you're now in a battle mode. Press X to attack and hold RB to... And it's just like, I don't need all this. And then, you know, you get to the next battle and it's like, by the way, you can switch forms and use the action button. It's just like, it's so stop-start. And I'm thinking... We're not playing games anymore. We're just moving between movies.
Why do games treat gamers like idiots now? You know what I mean? We figured out harder things with worse graphics. Like, remember, like, example, like Fantasy World or Fantasy Island Dizzy and Treasure Island Dizzy, right? Yeah. On the Spectrum. You get dropped into a level and got told nothing. You were just left to figure it out. You're an egg with boxing gloves and a hat, and you're walking around, you've just got to figure it out for yourself. Like, yeah. Not comparing Dizzy to Final Fantasy VII, but in terms of gaming, it just feels there's a lot of hand-holding getting done there. It's like, was it God of War Ragnarok or something? It was like,
yeah,
like, you shouting, boy, attack from the left. And it's like, figure that out myself. Yeah. It's like, boy.
It's like, guard against his attack, guard against his attacks.
Hold the block button, hold it down. Like, mate.
Imagine, do you remember The Last Ninja?
Mate. That's a game, by the way.
Yeah, what a game that is. What a game that is. That told you nothing.
No.
You just dropped in and it's just like, off you go. That's Figure that out.
Right, on you go. You're getting attacked. Do what? It's like... Oh, look, I've just died again. Let's figure out how not to. You know, it's just like, but it's too much hand holding, I think. Like, just because the games are visually more complex doesn't mean you need to, like, read out the controls. We've got manuals for a reason. Oh, wait, we don't.
No.
So, there we go. Bye. Yeah.
What about yourself, mate? You've been up too much?
Not really, mate. No gaming time at all. I've finished the Daytona video in terms of getting assets together. I'm now at the editing phase. The enjoyable part for me, mate. I like editing. But getting everything together is a pain in the arse. So just be glad to get that edited and get it uploaded, because I put a bit of time into it to get it together. Almost just under 20 minutes long it's going to be. So, aye, mate, it should be good. And then got the next couple... You know, already jotted down, so I'll start on those as well, because I need to try and get some stuff kind of uploaded for the summer holidays, of course, which are fast approaching, because we usually take that time off and do the square root of F all and just like let the channel coast for 8 weeks or so. So do what we can, mate.
We will. But so this episode, mate, great idea from yourself. If you want to tell our viewers and listeners what the premise of this discussion is going to be.
The premise of this episode, folks, is that the worst has happened. Something's came up catastrophic.
Your wife's seen your Sendico bill.
Well, puff. Shh, mate! Edit that out. So either your wife has seen the Sendico bill, or the worst has happened, something catastrophic, and you have to sell your gaming collection to make ends meet, to pay the bill, to see the way forward. But you can only keep five games. You know, you can still play through emulation or EverDrives, whatnot, ODEs and whatnot, but physical games are gone, and you can only keep five that mean something to you, that have got a meaning personally, that you have to keep them. You can't part with them. Which five games would you choose from the collection? Now, Dan has a much larger collection to choose from, so he probably had a harder time than me. But I think the ones I've got here, there'll be maybe a couple of surprises, but I think a couple of here that'll be quite obvious for me.
Yeah.
But no, so that's the premise of it, mate. Just a kind of wee fun discussion. It was kind of triggered a wee bit, you know, by obviously yourself going on Arcade Attack and doing the Desert Island Diskettes, and it was a kind of a play on that sort of premise that you can only pick five. Well, I think you did, was it four you guys did once it? So
Oh, we did five in the end.
five.
Yeah.
So aye, so it's a kind of play on that kind of format. So we'll see where we go, mate. But I've got my five here. I've seen you positioning your five behind you that you've cleverly planked behind yourself in that Saturn box. So aye, mate, let's the thing is, I'm trying to think what order to do them in. That's the thing. So that'd be a
Yeah,
hard choice.
I've hastily stacked them in some sort of order. As you were saying, mate, there's probably not many surprises. I think there'll be a few. There'll be ones that we've spoken about before. Interestingly, I think there's only one crossover with that I did on Time Attack. So, viewers and listeners, I'm probably familiar with Time Attack, Arcade Attack. But if you're not, definitely check them out. But yeah, I was had the pleasure of jumping on a podcast with them, talking about my five Desert Island Diskettes. If I was stuck on a desert island, what were the five games I'd take? It was intentionally, it was initially meant to be the two of us. Unfortunately,
Yeah, just family stuff, mate. Couldn't make
yeah,
it, but
but
hopefully make it next time.
yeah, and they're definitely keen to come the other way. So it was to a, so he was talking about
The return
who,
leg, mate.
yeah, exactly, two or all of them over on here, which would be loads of fun. Great bunch of chaps. But yeah, there's not much crossover. There's no crossover with, well, I think there's one game that crosses over. But not for the same reasons. But yeah, it was a great idea, mate, and it's probably something that a lot of kind of people that play games and collect, whether you are wanting to collect to have kind of a set, or just want to have a set of games, or you just want to build a library of games that you want to play, which people do. It's always that existential crisis, isn't it? If push came to shove, and you had to, if you had to lose your collection, if you had to sell it on, what would you keep? If the house was burning down, what would you run in to save?
You see, I didn't know what to do in that angle for it. I thought I'd go for the kind of financial angle rather than, because I would like to think that your games would be the last thing in your mind, like dogs kind of whimpering at the door. Hold on, I need my Neo Geo.
Reminds me of I'm sure, I can't remember exactly what it is now, but it's an episode of The Simpsons where there's a fire. And Homer, I think there's a fire. No, there's a meltdown or something in the power plant. And Homer runs in and he looks at the photos that's already his desk. And it's like him and the Marge, him and the kids, him and the dog. And looks around. And it's like him and at the Duff Bureau. And he grabs that one. He's like, oh.
Same premise, really, isn't it? Oh, superb, mate.
So,
Superb.
should I kick us off then, mate?
Go on then.
Okay, so the first one, we're going to start with one that's not going to be a surprise because I've mentioned it so many times. I even mentioned it on the episode we did with Sega Lord X and our most precious possessions, and it is, of course, the original Sonic the Hedgehog on the Master System. And this is my, well, it's my brother's childhood copy, the very first Sonic game that I ever played, the game that cemented my love for all things Sega. Before that, I dabbled with Sega in the arcades, dazzled by Afterburner, loved the Commodore 64 port of OutRun, and was blown away initially by that wave of Master System games my brother got. But it was this Sonic the Hedgehog, this exact copy right here with the Sonic the Comic sticker on there, sharper than a cyber razor cut, which makes sure it's, which means it is my copy. It's actually got two manuals in here because our childhood one, You know, I'd read this one so much that the actual front and back cover fell off it. So I have actually got a black and white version. I'm not sure if that's an original or a reprint, but yeah, but it's complete. Cart is faded a little bit, probably from being put in and pulled out of the console so often because it got so much play time. First game that I ever beat because, yeah, it's obviously growing up in the 8-bit era, games were, like we were saying about The Last Ninja, absolutely hard as nails. And compared to those, some of those, it was a little bit easier, but also a game that was so good that it compelled me to keep playing it. And yeah, there's not much monetary value in this game, to be honest, mate. I think, unless you've got the US copy and you've got there, and by that way, you've got the basically the PAL version with a US
The
barcode on the
sticker,
back, yeah,
right?
which is worth like 150 quid or
For
something
a
like that.
barcode sticker.
Yeah, but you take that barcode off and you've got the game that's you've got a game that's worth a couple of pounds. It's you're probably wiping about 200% of its value off. So it's not an expensive game. And if push came to shove and I had to sell my collection, I could probably sell it all and buy another one of these. But this particular one, I'd never be able to replicate it because it's not so much one that's. And I think that's the thing with all of these, mate. And it'll be the same with the ones that you pick. It's not so much the monetary value, the fact that you could replace them. It's the fact that they're titles that mean so much to you. And that's definitely, you know, as I say, it's one of those precious items that I talked about when we had the podcast with Mel, Sega Lord X. And, you know, it's very much the same reasons that I'd pick this one, I'd keep this one. But yeah, it's just one of those very special games for me that I just could not be without. And as far as something that cements the history of my time with Sega, it's the cornerstone. Without this game, I'm not here.
Exactly. No, great choice, mate. I knew that one would be there. And obviously, we've got the wee framed
I know.
case that I got as well for your 40th.
Just
There we
the
go.
office a little bit.
There it is.
Just up there.
My birthday gift to
Yes,
Dan for
from
his
yourself.
40th. Yep. Great stuff, mate. No, great choice. Brilliant.
And your very first one, mate.
My first one after going through them, I'm going to start off with a Dreamcast game. And I'm going for Virtua Fighter 3 TV. Again, not a game that, you would think would cost a lot to replace. In fact, it wouldn't. You get it for about 10, 15 quid. This version is obviously the one with the Project Berkeley disc. So it's got the bonus in there. It's even got the little kind of your registration card and your little promotional flyer where your kind of games coming soon and whatnot. But again, this was the game that I just had to import a Dreamcast for. That was the very version, not this exact copy, but that version with Project Berkeley's demo on there that I got as part of my bundle when I imported my DC. And again, just so many memories attached to that game. Again, it's weird that we've never seen it really come home apart from the version in Yakuza, in the arcade. It still remains the only Virtua Fighter that's a console exclusive on Sega hardware to this day. Well, maybe Virtua Fighter Kids might caveat that. Has that ever came anywhere else? Did that get
No,
out in
I think yeah, probably that probably.
2500 range, possibly, I think. But
No, I don't think he did. I think yeah, Virtua Fighter Kids, but
Sega
no, that's just
PC?
it's. Oh, we might have to check that. I don't think it did. I think Virtua Fighter Kids is still Sega Saturn exclusive, but
In
it's
terms of
basically
mainline,
just
aye. In
Virtua
terms
Fighter.
of
It's
main,
basically VF2. So
aye.
you're talking mainline games. I
So
mean.
in terms of mainline VF games, it's just the only one that remains Sega hardware console exclusive. So, aye, just so many memories attached to that. They say before, like getting the shoddy Microsoft Paint wallpaper with a picture of the Dreamcast and updating it every day, days until Dreamcast, and changing that countdown clock to go to Charlie's and pick it up. Just so many memories attached to that game. Still love playing it. Still love just putting the attract mode on and just let it do its thing. Just let it run. Just I still think it looks phenomenal today. Gets criticized by some people for not being arcade perfect, but I think side by side with the Model 3 version, you can see that Genki did a pretty damn good job in the time frame. So yeah, that I would take that with me every time.
You can kind of live vicariously through Shenmue on there as well, those early stages, and then relive that
That's
experience
that.
seeing that Project Berkeley disc, because yeah, that really was exciting at the time.
It was. I remember booting that up as well, and like again, there's kind of you can see the evolution, but like Ryu's design has since changed, the face of Landy's changed. Ryu's dad looks kind of similar, but again, he's been made quite older looking compared to what is in the Project Berkeley. You've got like Shenhua doing a big power attack and basically killing two folk. So there's Ryu as well hanging for the side of a train. You've got the big blue temple, the eyes light up and the mouth opens, and there's a big glowing light that goes through. Just amazing. And obviously you get the interview with Yu Suzuki on it and can't understand a word of it. But he's talking about, also like Outrun and Hang On and going through all his kind of his library of games basically. Kind of and you get a nice wee picture. I think the cabinet comes up as well and some gameplay in a little kind of faded window while he's talking on screen as well. So just a brilliant bonus. It did come out eventually in Japan as like a standard jewel case on its own later on, but that Project Berkeley double jewel case, man, that's just say you can replace it for pretty cheap. The copy I've got is in pretty great nick. Doesn't have a spine card, but it's got all the inserts and it's pretty much immaculate. You know what I
Yeah,
mean? It's,
stunning.
so that's mine, mate. That's my first one I would take.
Yeah, it's yeah, the last thing I was going to say on that is that there was someone on social media was sharing a review recently in the US magazine that was really harsh on it, really unkind, calling the visuals dated. I was thinking, in 1999, how could you call Virtua Fighter 3 dated? I know we'd had Soul Calibur. But really, what else, fighting game wise, looked that good? How could you call that game dated? It was.
It was definitely a victim of the delay,
Yeah.
the near year between the Japanese release and what, like, the 10 months or what, between the Japanese release and the US. To have that kind of that gap where Light Power Stone and Soul Calibur came out. So I can understand to an extent it's not dated in terms of dated in general. It might be dated on the hardware, with the caveat that it was a launch game in Japan and things have obviously come since. But no, I still love looking at the individual fingers and the way the eyes scan the scenes and the flowing clothes of what Pai and I can't really butcher her name again. Aoi. Aoi. Oi. Oi. I can't say the word after that. Oi. If I ain't the invisible beep, I'm
Diabolical.
fucking diabolical. Right. So I just, mate, I still love it. It's still my second favorite Virtua Fighter game. And that's close. Like between VF2 and VF3, I can flip a coin, mate, honestly. Love them both.
It's absolutely brilliant, mate. Great stuff. So my next one, slightly unexpected maybe, but Radiant Silver Gun, or as it's known in Japan,
Radianto Sharubagan.
and yeah, I absolutely adore this game, and it's one that I kind of revisit all the time. For me, it's my favorite shoot 'em up of all time, and it's kind of one of those genres that I don't play it or talk about it as much as, say, fighting games, platform games, role playing games, but I do love a good shoot 'em up. If I've got a few minutes, regardless of where I am, if I'm pressed for time, I don't normally play. If I'm playing a modern system, I don't normally play a racer because it takes so bloody long to get into a race today. Like Forza Horizon 6, as great as it is, you have to go through the menu and then you get taken to the house and then you have to get out the house to go to a race, and it's just like it takes too long. But usually, if I'm playing wherever I am, I've got some sort of, shoot 'em up downloaded. There's tons on the Xbox 360, including a port of this, which I put on now and again. But for me, Radiant Silver Gun is absolutely top of the pack, and this is my copy from back in the day. It's a game that I think is still best played on Saturn. You've had ports to absolutely everything since, but I think they kind of They changed the game, not necessarily for the worse, but it's not true to kind of the original game. The way that the way that the console exclusive modes work, the way that you rack up extra credits and continues and stuff, and even though it's not translated this version, you know, the translated versions use subtitles. It's just like, how am I meant to read this when I'm getting absolutely hammered by
Good luck with that.
it's like the very beginning of the game. It's like, and on that day we journeyed back to Earth. And you're like, well, hold on, mate, I'm getting shot at here.
Dodging swarms of bullets and waves of enemies. Oh, hold on, I'm just going to read these subtitles now.
Yeah, so it's a genre that I love. I've loved, probably tied to one of my earliest memories, which is playing Space Invaders or some sort of Space Invaders clone, kind of. The vertical shooter is an evolution of that, and it's kind of lived with me all this time. I remember when they had, I think it was Strikers 1943, they had in the cab office
Right.
back in my hometown, all the way back. They had it in there in like 2000. I'd come out of the pub, and that's when I'd be. I'd always be playing that. But yeah, as I was saying, this is absolutely the best shoot 'em up for me. I absolutely adore it. Do have a video on the channel saying that it is the greatest shoot 'em up of all time. It just ticks all the boxes. It's fantastic to play. It's gorgeous to look at. The soundtrack is amazing. It's a soundtrack that I listen to quite a lot, though it's not on Spotify, which is really annoying. So someone needs to get it on Spotify. But it's just top draw, mate. And unfortunately, with this one, unlike Sonic, yeah, I could. There's nothing too special about this one. It's not got any stickers on it. It's my original copy. But as you well know, mate, you know, to replace this would be extremely difficult, given what it goes for these days.
Yeah, well, my copy is currently sitting in a FedEx facility, arriving on Monday at Tom Thumb's house, and making its way up the express postage line to Glasgow. But I say it's one. Whenever I started getting back and importing Saturn after I imported Dreamcast, it for the first games that I wanted to get. And again, it was in the 07 cull. Everything was sold, and that went. Now, Tom Thumb's actually said that we can never corroborate it or confirm it, right? Because he doesn't have the same log on or pat. I can't remember his eBay account, whether he can't, or his history doesn't go back that far. But he says that round about that time, he bought a copy of Radiant Silver Gun on eBay from someone in Scotland, right? And he's since given that copy or sold that copy on to Adam Connolly. So we don't know if it's mine, but there's a chance that Tom was the guy that bought my copy. Now, I'm not the only person in Scotland that had a copy of Radiant Silver Gun on eBay at that time, right? But imagine it was quite a reasonable number on there, because you know it was at that time. I think there was more of a roaring trade to sell copies of it because of the kind of reputation it had, and like kind of Western Saturn magazines kind of pushing it as a big import title. You had to own this on Saturn.
And Charlie's
But
would have still been open back then as well, wouldn't
I mate, I so mate. But I say my copy that I won at auction was 94 quid on Sendico, which isn't it, by what it goes for selling on eBay is a bargain. I would a max bid of 120 quid, and it was sitting at 62. It jumped up to 72. Two more bids came in and jumped it up to 94, and it sat there for the last 12 hours, the last 12 nerve-wracking hours. And it finished, and it's got the reg cards, it's got the spine card, which again my copy had back in the day. So it's just kind of slowly but surely kind of replacing these things. Like same with like Virtua Fighter 3 TB. Like again, it's not my original copy from back in the day, but I did have it, so there's that kind of attachment to it. But Radiant Silver Gun is just, you're right, mate, it does play best on Saturn. I think just because of that whole STV connection. You know what I mean? You've got that. It's the architecture it was meant to run on. It was designed on that architecture, so it'll obviously run best on that. But it's a phenomenal shoot 'em up, man. It's like the level of depth, the number of weapons, the level design, that merge of 2D and 3D. You know what I mean? Just the stages have got incredible depth to them. In terms of depth, I mean going down the way, like you can obviously the enemy waves and the kind of the scenery and the kind of destructible objects you've got in the kind of immediate field, but the kind of level of detail as you go down like cities below and scenery below and all that. It's just it's a breathtaking game, mate. So that's a good choice.
Really is. I mean, yeah, it's when you kind of when you're descending into the city and the levels kind of part in, so it gives you that sense that you're descending into this like Blade Runner style like mega city as you're going down. It's absolutely phenomenal. Just something that we talked about. I don't know if it was the last Sega Saturn magazine episode, but I mentioned Golden Axe of Jewel looks better on STV, and it's similar for Red and Silver Gun, and I found out why that is, and it's not because STV does have different specs, because as far as I'm aware, it's got basically the same specs. It's closer to Saturn, I think, than Naomi, but apparently STV can only output at a standard arcade resolution, which is obviously a little bit higher than what the Saturn stock resolution is. Although if you're playing console Radiant Silver Gun, it does change resolution a bit. Anyone that's used no SSE on it will see it switch between resolution modes. But yeah, it's the same with Radiant Silver Gun. So that was something quite interesting. So anyone that still had that in their head from that discussion, that's why. But yeah, it's a stunning looking game, mate. An absolute all-time classic and irreplaceable, I think, pretty much. So I could not be without that one.
Good stuff, mate. Good stuff.
What's next for you?
Oh, mate, where do I go next? Right. Right. Choices. The Japanese version of Panzer Dragoon. Now, the reason why I've went for this is because the artwork, mate. Pure and simple. I think this is possibly one of the most beautiful game packages on Saturn, right? So not only have you got that beautiful Mobius-inspired artwork on the front, the disc also has it. Right? Look at that. Look at the workmanship on that disc. That's incredible, right? Also, my copy's got, like, your flyer, your soft information, volume 1. Got a spine card in there. But this is the pied de resistance, mate. The Panzer Dragoon story, because there's no instruction manual, right? So the instruction manual basically folds out. Bear with me. Right, so you get essentially this big poster, like essentially telling you the story and the controls and whatnot. But when you turn it round, it's a big ass poster with awesome. More artwork. So, like, absolutely incredible. So, having that one there as well is just, it's a complete package. So, I have a spare copy now, which I don't have that poster and whatnot in it, but you don't have the Japanese copy, so I'll get that sent down to you in due course, mate.
Oh, wonderful, mate.
But I think just because, as well as the game itself, it's like, it's a game that I'd always want. Even if I played it on an ODE, to kind of know you've got a physical copy of it there, just because of that package, it's why I would never want to part with it. So, absolutely love that. Plus the game itself as well. It's one of my favourite Saturn games. I know when it comes to the whole Panzer Dragoon thing, I'm in Team Panzer, you're in Team Zwei. So, it's like the whole Virtua Cop thing, Virtua Cop 1, Virtua Cop 2. But I just love. Just love the game. It's just that whole desolate, lonely, you know, the taking on the burden to take on the Empire alone on top of this dragon, you know, against the hordes of enemies, and just everything about it, just the atmosphere, the music, the controls, the gameplay, the level design, just what a game, mate. What a game.
And it's so intrinsically tied to the soul of the Sega Saturn, isn't it?
It is, mate.
You know, the Sega Saturn, if it struggled for one thing, it struggled for effectively kind of a key franchise or a mascot, in the way that, you know, the Mega Drive had Sonic and Nintendo have all their characters and Xbox has Halo. It didn't have that. I mean, it had Knights, but that was one game. Obviously, Panzer Dragoon is the most, the series actually achieved the trilogy on the hardware, and that very first game, coming so early on in the Saturn's life, well, 4 months after launch, it was March, wasn't it? March 95. It was a head turner, visual, audio, and storytelling masterpiece that just nails that classic arcade gameplay that Sega were famous for. So yeah, it's tied to the soul of the Saturn and tied to the soul of Sega for me. So as much as I do prefer the second one, it's very close.
Aye. I just turned off portrait light. I noticed I had portrait light. It was blurred and everything. I was holding up to the camera. I was trying to find an angle. So yeah, you can see it better now. I've turned off portrait lighting. So it's actually the camera focusing on it better now. But I see. It was actually whenever I did the mind I did that little kind of import video. Like when I didn't have much time to do like kind of narration. So I tried a captions video, which wasn't bad, but wasn't then he kind of hit the mark, so we'll see if I maybe do more about add narration to them. But it was somebody actually said in the comments, oh, you didn't show the poster. I was like, I don't have the poster version. So it was like after I came off reading that comment, I was like, Tom, get me a copy. It's like
Decepticons
how often is that voice message used? We have a WhatsApp chat, folks, between myself, Dan, and Tom called the Sendico Addicts. Yes, where we correlate our purchases, watch auctions, send links for future reference. Needs to be done, mate. What's that?
Absolutely. It
All right.
has to be done.
Thinking man gif. You know what I mean? Ah, so there we go, mate. So that's my second one.
So, number three for me. The game itself won't be a surprise. Maybe the version will, but this is Nights into Dreams. One of my favorite games of all time. Probably second only to Sonic the Hedgehog 2. And it's funny, mate, because I was thinking, I've managed to play a few games lately for fun, not for content. Although, yeah, stuff like Yakuza, Pirates, I'm kind of playing for fun, but also making content out of it. But yeah, I'm playing that. I'm playing Yakuza. It's just a typical thing where I'm just d jumping from one thing to another. I've got Yakuza, Pirates, Soul Hackers 2, Hollow Knight, Silk Song, which that game drives me insane. I don't even think I'm enjoying that game at all. Yeah, I keep playing it because it's just
Why
like
if you're enjoying you
it's just like
sadist?
it is. I've spent like 11 hours in it, and I've got up to this boss, and I was like, right,
Man.
this must be like halfway, and it's like this is the end of chapter one of five, and I was like, oh my God, I'm not gonna play this game anymore, and then like I just ended up playing. And then, as I say, I was playing Final Fantasy VII Remake. I finished Resident Evil Village the other day, which was okay. But the games that I've enjoyed the most are the ones that I'm making content on, which were the original Sonic the Hedgehog and Nights into the Dreams, both having their anniversaries around the time that this will be going out. And obviously, there's going to be a video about me basically doing a love infant Nights into Dreams that was meant to be 2,000 words long. It's closer to double that. And obviously there's a video on the channel before, and I've spoke so many times about this game. It was one of my desert island diskettes. I would have loved to have the PAL version because that was my original version, and I've still got the disc and the manual and the 3D control pad, but I don't have the box. But this one, I do have the box. And it's got the full spine card, leaflets and flyers and absolutely everything in the disc, in the case. It's one of my favorite games of all time, and obviously natively plays at 60 Hz, so the best way to play it. What can I say about this game that hasn't been said a million times? It's just an absolute masterpiece, absolutely magical. And unlike a lot of Japanese games, the language barrier is non-existent because everything's in English. There's no spoken dialogue. The only things that aren't in English are the hints that you get if you don't get an A rank, which, I'd only started seeing them because I was doing very specific things for the video to prove certain points. So it's not like I'm going to be seeing them. But yeah, as much as I think I do. I've got the PAL manual over here, actually. I
Because
do.
the package that we got here, the manual was in there with the jewel case. It
That's
just
right,
had
yeah.
the cover. There was no back either. It was just a plain jewel case with like a sleeve in the front.
That's right. Give me a second.
Here's one I prepared earlier.
or didn't prepare, which is why I'm having to reach around. Yeah, it does have a back. So it does,
oh, it does
have
a back.
Yeah.
Okay.
So yeah, I do love that artwork, but the problem is it's missing the box. But yeah, I've got this one actually in a book off in Japan. So I saw this and I had to have it. It didn't actually come with the game. The game I had already.
Because it was sealed, wasn't it? We thought the game was in it, because you showed me it whenever you were over there. You sent me a picture.
Yeah.
And like it was sealed, but you thought the game was actually in with
yeah.
it.
They'd obviously resealed it. But yeah, it's yeah, just this big chunky box with the game in, the 3D, it's got to put the game in there now. The 3D pad, which is obviously this one, that's the one that I'm using at the moment, the white one. As I say, I do have the black one. But I've gone fully Japanese to play it recently, so I've got the Japanese white pad in my V Saturn. And yeah,
why
I'm
not,
loving it.
Mate?
It's as I say, second favorite game of all time, an absolute masterpiece. When I play this game, I feel like a kid again. And yeah, I've been playing it nonstop, you know, over the last few weeks, and I just can't get enough of it. It's a game that means a lot to me. It's one of the reasons I got a Sega Saturn in the first place. I just couldn't be without it in that Japanese version. Complete. Yeah, I absolutely adore it. And unfortunately, it's another one. Even the PAL kind of long box version, if you just wanted a PAL version without the 3D controller, it goes for something like £50 these days. And if you want the actual boxed, fully boxed version with the 3D pad, it's like, you're looking over 100. Japanese version's a bit cheaper, but yeah, it's crazy, mate. So yeah, I couldn't be without that and sell that and not be able to replace it. So yeah, that's kind of Sonic on the Master System level for me. Couldn't be without it.
That's like what they call one of the Mandela moments for me, because like I remember my uncle buying Knights with the control pad with the whole bundle, and Dixon's on Argyle Street, which is now a TK Maxx. But I remember, like, exactly what it was. Cash desk was halfway up the right hand side of the shop. There was a little kind of display with like new releases, and there they picked it up. And I think the guy took ages to come back, because it was like a display box. He took ages to come back with the actual one he was going to sell. But I, for some reason, in my mind, I'm thinking the back was plain as well. Is the Virtua Cop one plain? Or have I just had a complete mind blank?
Let's
here we
find
go.
Out. Time
Let's
to
see.
Find out.
Because let's see, if I get a back as well, then my memory's losing its effectiveness.
Yep, Virtua Cop 2 has the
aye.
Back. Virtua
Cop
the
1 gun in the back, didn't it?
Has the
That's
gun
right.
The
back. Jesus Christ, James, there we go. That's it. Father of Three is robbing me of my brain cells.
Yeah, I can remember one way or the other.
Oh, maybe it's this. Oh, nah, Knights is a great choice, mate. Brilliant game. I'm nowhere near as good at it as you are, though.
Yeah.
My max link's about 31 or something. I think you can get way up. Like, from your footage, I've seen you like hitting ridiculous numbers of links.
Yeah, it's one of the, and that's the thing about Knights is I like the other day I got 170, and I should be getting over 200 on the Frozen Bell stage. Each could easily get over 200, and I was so annoyed with myself because I was doing a run. So I'm gonna aim for a high score in this one. I was obviously recording it, and obviously I put the footage in the video. But I'm like, you do the first lap of Frozen Bell, and this version is actually in Christmas Nights as the Link Attack mode.
Right.
I think you get something like 8 or 12 blue chips on your first cycle. So you get 4 chips, do a power loop, get those, and you come straight to the Idia Palace. So I thought, well, I'm not going to drop my chips in there. I'm going to go back round and get the other 16 to fill it up. So I go around once, skip over it. Second time I get to it, I think I've got 16 chips. So I skip over it again. But then I start getting links, and I start getting like a max of 30. And I've gone around it 4 times, and I've gone, God, do you know what? I'd be able to do this if that stupid Idiot Palace wasn't in the way. And I've not realised, no, I've got to blow that up. What am I doing?
No, you just get rid of it and it'll vanish.
I just kept avoiding it. was at a moment when I was just like, hang on a second.
Sometimes, mate, that just happens. You get that focused that you miss the obvious thing.
And wood for the trees moment.
It really is. Brilliant stuff, mate.
Yeah. What's next for you?
Next for me, mate. Back to Dreamcast.
Hey.
So again, I was one I imported back on the Dreamcast, got it for Charlie's, a second hand copy I got for Charlie's. Again, this copy's a Sendico special. Still got the spine card, which again I had back in the day. I just love the packaging. I love how plain and simple it is. And also I like the fact that the PAL copy kind of replicated the Japanese one, didn't go for that stupid artwork that the US Sega artwork by and large is absolutely mince. Like, this
dreadful.
It's the real bare minimum effort, or else it's either get one extreme or the other. It's very basic, or else it's kind of overly busy. It's like the Crazy Taxi one is just like, what are you trying to do? Like, the kind of Axel doesn't even look like him. This woman's screaming over the top of your shoulder. It's like, I get that you're kind of trying to draw or kind of not animate, but kind of have this version of what the game's meant to represent. But I just love the fact that you've got this like kind of representation of the arcade cab, basically. You know what I mean? The yellow with the logo, totally plain and simple. But this is my favorite Dreamcast game. Like, this game for me embodies the very spirit of that system. Like, I know people go, Shenmue does that. If you think that, that's fine. But this. This game, mate, this disc here, that is a time capsule, right, on disc. This game, with its soundtrack, with the brands, the vibe, everything about it just takes you straight back to that early 2000s. It's just a phenomenal game. The level of depth that is hidden inside this game, like, you can pick up Crazy Taxi without knowing how to do limit cuts and crazy dashes and crazy drifts and whatnot, and you can have a good time with it. But see, when you learn these moves and you learn how to merge them, if you do like a crazy dash and then you go into a limit cut straight after it because you use the speed boost for the dash to power the limit cut, then you get off like a shot and then the muscle memory kicks in and you're going, because I use control method B on the Dreamcast. So I move accelerate and brake to the triggers and I've got drive and reverse on A and B. So, like basically, I'm you're constantly like that. You're getting off one and onto the other. So, you're constantly sitting doing you're like this. Yeah. And you just build it up and build it up. And the speeds you can hit are ridiculous. And before you know it, like, a quick shot can turn into a 45, 50-minute, one-hour-long game. You know, so on a Discord for June's challenge, I've put Crazy Taxi up. And I've done it as a 10-crazy-minute. So, I've said I'm sitting it out because people were saying, well, James will win that. So it's like, to be fair, I've put up a kind of a rough kind of opening time just as a kind of benchmark sort of thing. But for fairness, I thought I'll sit it out because the chances are I'll probably be the highest. That's not being arrogant. It's just that I'm that good at the game. I've put that much time into it. Like, I know that map. I don't need the waypoint. When somebody tells me where they're going, I know where it is. It's like driving about like my local area. Like, if somebody stopped me at the end of the street, would take me to Tesco, I'd know where to go, mate, because I know the place inside it. It's like, you know, it's all the little kind of like shortcuts as well. The little kind of, like, again, going along the motorway or the freeway towards, like, if you get told to go to the police station, and you can basically lock the right hand wheels of the taxi into the almost like the kind of gutter initial D style of the road. And just limit cut along, you'll pick up crazy bonuses for passing, like, obviously traffic, which is usually the oil tankers and the kind of buses and coaches. You'll fly by them, you'll rack up a nice bonus there, then you can crazy drift into the police station area, smash into the fence, bounce back out into the area with the red zone for the wee girl who wants to get picked up, because a wee woman in red that always gets picked up. She goes around to the bank for there, right? You can then for there choose to go down to the right and you get your yellows around about the kind of the hotel and whatnot, or you can go straight ahead and pick up a green, and the chances are the green guy is going to want to head straight back through to original Levi's store, the baseball stadium, or the RB station, right? But no, no, no. You do the exact same the other way, right? You drive on the same side of the road that you came along in, right? Onto incoming traffic, locking your left-hand wheels into the gutter on the same side of the road that you came along, but you just tilt the analog stick slightly. Not enough to make it career round, but just enough so that you're hugging the wall and you've got all these buses and tankers flying by you and you're racking up bonuses, mate. And literally you can rack up for each one that you pass, your bonus is like $25, $30, $35. The fare that you can rack up going back and forward along that freeway is insane if you pick up the right passengers. So it's all these wee things as well, like doing the lap. Like the goal is you get to the bus station, the guy in the suit with the ginger hair and the specs is there, you pick him up. If he goes to the fire station, it's game on. Guy across the road with the brown suit and the bunch of roses, he goes to the university, sometimes he fucks with you and goes back to the mall and he ruins your run. But 9 times out of 10, he goes to the university and that's you back at the very start again. And it's that kind of thing, that the amount of time I've put in that game that's so deep. And again, you could replace that for absolute dirt cheap, but just to have a copy in that condition again, similar to what it was when I got it for Charlie's, whoever had it, didn't have it for long, traded it back in. So I got, I think it was £35 I paid for it back in the day, whenever I, which for an import game is ridiculously cheap. But I absolutely love this game. I'd love to do a video on like a proper tutorial on playing it, but the fact that like the music would just get completely bombed out for copyright. So, but no, I just think that game just encapsulates Dreamcast for me. Just the sheer level of fun, the depth to it, the soundtrack, the vibe, the brands, everything about it, mate. It is timeless.
Yeah, it is. It is. And yeah, that's I had that version back in the day. And it is the best because obviously the back panels behind the disc are all yellow as well. Unlike as like some Dreamcast games, they've got the kind of the white block, somewhat transparent and orange in the background, but that's kind of unique, that one. Yeah.
It's no frills, mate. Just does what it says in the tin.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, the Japanese Dreamcast artwork is so much better. That's why I had to get Jet Set Radio again, because that design on the front is just so stunning.
Oh, that's on my list as well now, mate. See you. But look at the spine cards.
Yeah, what does it say again?
Super duper taxi ride. super duper taxi ride you'll ever get. That's upside down, that's a super duper taxi ride you'll ever get. There you go. It says on the back, I always loved that in Japanese spine cards. No resale. Then they call like right.
Yeah. I mean, I've got the PAL version now, which does have a 60 hertz option, but
yes, all right.
Yeah, it's obviously got the same sleeve as the Japanese version, but obviously it's got a big blue case around it, lots of blue plastic, which spoils it a little bit. So it's one of those where I do think about picking up a Japanese copy, but on balance, it probably isn't quite worth it. It's not as the difference isn't as stark as the Jet Set Radio one.
Aye, that's a and the thing is with the Jet Set Radio one, I remember as well, the manual insert, it's a kind of very thick textured kind of paper. Yep. It's not the glossy kind of usual print. It's it's a very thick, really premium quality feeling.
Yeah.
Aye. It's in a thicker case, it's in a kind of the thicker jewel case as well. So
yeah.
That's phenomenal.
I reach up there. I don't think I can reach it. No.
Go gadget arms.
I won't dare it.
It's up there somewhere. Where is it? There it is. Hey.
No. No. It's too much of a faff. Next time.
I'll get you next time, gadgets. Oh, that hot. Oh, I'm building that impression again. Leave Frank Welker to that one. On you go, mate.
Was it Frank Welker that did Dr. Claw?
Sure has, aye. Because that's what your Soundwave evolved
from. Basically Soundwave, yeah.
Aye.
Without the vocoder.
Decepticons, we have located the shard. Oh, man. Jesus Christ.
It's when he laughs.
Don't do that to your voice. You'll fuck it up.
It's the third one, isn't it? It's Dark of the Moon, where he's the Mercedes. And it turns out his girlfriend's boss, Carly's boss, has been screwing him over. He's been working with the Decepticons. She gets in the Mercedes, or he transforms, turns into Southwave, and he grabs her and goes, oh, and it sounds like it's got that awful voice, that awful laugh.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah. But yeah. Cool. Good stuff, mate. Crazy Taxi.
Yep.
The last time I actually played that wasn't on Dreamcast. I was playing it on the Steam Deck. And I'll probably play that on the Steam Deck while I'm on holiday. I need to get the mods to put the original music back in. It's not bad. Yes. It's not bad on the Steam Deck. It's better than the PS2 version.
Oh, God.
Obviously, it's best on the Dreamcast.
So that meant, again, like with Radiant Silvergun, like you said earlier, like STV is closer to Saturn than Naomi is to Dreamcast, but the Naomi ports on Dreamcast are just phenomenal.
Yeah.
Like, to the naked eye sitting there playing them, there's very little difference.
Yeah.
So.
I still need to submit a score for the challenge. So I need to get around to doing that. Maybe this weekend.
Maybe another shot. Because the run I had there, somebody wanted to go to the bus terminal, right? And I'm convinced, right, in all my years playing Crazy Taxi, I think the game messes with you, right? I think whenever it knows you're doing well, it just, the AI gets really, really cheap. Like, some of the things, it'll just throw cars and buses in front of you for, like, no reason. There's no rational reason for this car, and that's what happened. I was doing the run through to the bus terminal, and I didn't take the underpass going through. I thought, I'll just take the right hand, kind of wee channel through, and it was chock-a-block, mate. And I'm like, I feel like it's like Die Hard with a vengeance here. Like, where am I to go? Like, try and get a runner and aim for the end zone sort of thing. It was completely blocked. I tried to bat my way through, and the time ran out, and the passenger jumped it, so I lost that one. So, harder to get. I'd have got probably a top 10K for that score, if it wasn't for that.
Everyone turns into Bowie Knife 99.
So. Mess with your head, Crazy Taxi. You think about it after this, it's still. You start trying to plot passengers and where to go. Oh, honestly, love it. Yeah. Love it.
Yeah, I think it's the same for you, as it is as Knights is to me.
Whenever you pick up Knights, maybe halfway through, like maybe doing the kind of, obviously your kind of four runs that you go around.
Yeah.
Like, you probably know halfway through, like, I could actually abandon this because this isn't going to plan. Like, yeah. You basically know that you're, this isn't my best.
Yeah.
I could restart this. So that's it, mate. That's Sega games for you.
It is, mate. Short, but you're playing forever.
That's it, mate.
There you go. Right, number four for me, mate. Back to Panzer Dragoon again. And it's, of course, Panzer Dragoon Saga. What can I say about this one? It's
the floor is yours.
Yeah, I mean, for a start, if I sell that, I'm not getting it back.
I know, mate.
Yeah, it's unobtainable. But yeah, I mean, I've obviously got the story behind this version. I've got the broken one on the shelf there, which we talked about before. But yeah, obviously, you know, from buying it on release day, the crash on my bike, snapping the disc and having to discover eBay a couple of years later and replace it and finally having it complete. You know, it's a game that I, you know, after playing that initial demo with Sega, it's the first full disc.
Yep. Nah, it's not a demo disc, it's the first disc.
Yeah. But after playing that initial first disc that was given away with Sega Saturn Magazine, because it was always a game that caught my eye, and both Sega Saturn Magazine and Sega Saturn Power had covered it off. And there was genuine excitement about it, not least because the first two games were so good. Mm-hmm. But obviously, by the time that news was breaking about it. RPGs were all the rage. Final Fantasy VII had hit, and this was the Saturn's answer. For me, it's just it's another insanely special, magical game that just, you know, as a role-playing game, yeah, it's a little bit on the kind of the short side, but it's different, it's unique, high production value, stunning graphics, like fairly large open world areas, like open world maps that you can explore and fly around on your dragon, an amazing battle system, a stunning soundtrack, and the way that the visuals change, you know, when you get to Uru and you're progressing from day to dusk to night, just everything about it's just amazing. It's a game that I try to play as often as I can. And I really do need to get around to playing it again, because it's been a couple of years actually since I played through it all. But yeah, it's a game, not only what a game that I love and one of my favorite games on the system, but it's a game that I've got a lot of history with, a game that I kind of fought tooth and nail to finally get hold of and play through beginning to end. And of course, it's a game that, yeah, you're not going to replace it. If you had to sell everything for whatever reason, you're not going to find whatever it goes for now down the back of the sofa to replace it anytime soon. It's pretty much gone, which is a shame, really, because it's a game that everyone really should play. I was thinking earlier, and I can't remember what set it off this train of thought, but it really should have been kind of the Sega Saturn's Zelda. There really was nothing like it, and it was that impressive. You know, it could have been like Ocarina of Time levels. Maybe not that, because Zelda's always got that gravitas behind it, but it could have been something that changed the direction of the Sega Saturn if it was kind of marketed right. You know, Nights into Dreams was Sega's big 96 game, but that's always been a difficult sell. Panzer Dragoon Saga was a game that, realistically, for all the stuff it did with fully voiced cutscenes, maybe if you put it, and it sounds like blasphemy because I'd hate it, but if you had English voice actors, it'd appeal to the masses. Who knows, in a different timeline, maybe more people get to play that game. I mean, it's a shame that it's a game that's exclusive to the Saturn, and it's so prohibitively expensive that no one ever gets to play it. And that's what you know, a lot of the time you get into these bad faith arguments on social media where people go, oh, the Sega Saturn's crap, it's got no games. You say, oh, it's got these games. So yeah, but the games are too expensive. And it's like, well, yeah. You know, I know that there's ODEs and stuff, but people like to play the genuine article at times. Stubbornly, I think. But yeah, that's it, mate. It's a classic, one close to my heart, and one that I could never replace.
I was the same as you, mate. I never played that disc one on Sega Saturn magazine. Within 20 minutes, I was onto gameplay and pre-ordered it. $37.99. Not even 10 times that would get you a copy now. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So it's I feel
like that dick earlier, wasn't it? Selling Golden Axe with the gameplay £1.99 sticker.
Aye, for 63 quid. Fuck off. Honestly, man, go away. Like, take that off if you're going to fleece folk. Why leave it on? Like, oh, because it's nostalgia, because it's a GameStation, like, pre-owned price tag. Adds to the appeal. No, you're just rubbing it in, how much profit's being made on it. You know what I mean?
If only we knew, I would have put off buying. I remember seeing them. They were $1.99, and it was buy one, get one half price.
Mate,
and I went in there, and I think I bought Lost Planet for 40 quid.
That's the thing. It's like, this stuff now is, it just, that's why it just baffles the shit out of me that it costs so much. It's like, old is like more expensive because, like, A, it's nostalgia. That's what's fueling it, because it's basically people monetizing, like, us misty-eyed old sods that want to kind of own what we once had. But it's like, this is games and systems that were, like, in bargain bins. Mm-hmm. Like, nobody wanted them. Like, people threw them at shops to trade them in to get anything off the new systems. And all of a sudden, now they're all in demand. But with, like, Panzer Dragoon Saga, the thing that I feel sorry for it, in that there's now a lot of people who will come to Panzer Dragoon Saga because of the reputation of its rarity and its price. There's a lot of people who come to Panzer Dragoon Saga now, and it's because of that. and they go in with certain expectations that because it's such an expensive game, it should do X, Y, Z. And in that regard, I don't think Panzer Dragoon Saga gets a fair shake. Like, I don't think it can impress as a £500-600 game. No game's worth that, right? But the people, again, who were there, but hate using that because you get pulled up for it, but at the end of the day, the context is there. We got it because we played the demo disc or the full disc that Rich managed to strike a deal with Sega to put on the cover at SSM. We played that. We'd read the previews. Like, we'd played the first two games. We were within the Saturn ecosystem as a current system. So we came to it as another Panzer Dragoon game, another game in the series that we were enjoying. And I think that context is completely different. I think there's two completely different sets of people. I personally don't think anybody who buys Panzer Dragoon Saga for £600-800, whatever they pay for it, can fully ever really enjoy it the way we did, because the context they have is, I've just bought this really rare and expensive Saturn game. They're not coming to it as in, oh, it's another Panzer Dragoon game on the system that I'm so invested in right now. It's a completely different mindset. The price tag and the rarity cannot be ignored. It has an impact. And I just don't think people that pay that, there will be people that have paid it and have enjoyed it. I'm not saying that they haven't, but I just don't think that it's fair that the game is now held up as this massively expensive, rare game that there's people that will look at it and go, oh, it's pretty shit for a £900 game. No, don't. No. It's not as good as Final Fantasy VII and it costs £900. No. What are you doing? It's like... So, like, that's why I think playing it on, like, if you can, I've bought a Japanese copy since, just because I want to own the code on disc again. Like, it was the cheapest way for me to get it again. Obviously, playing it is nigh on impossible because it's all, you know, Japanese and Panzerese and certain cutscenes and whatnot. You can fumble your way around the menus with muscle memory in terms of the kind of the UI and the battle system, and that's fine, but the story would be completely lost on you. But for me, it was more a case of I just wanted to own the code on disc again. It was the closest I could get to actually having it. So, and the Japanese version is as beautiful as Dan reaches for it. Aye. You know, again, it's phenomenal. The soundtrack, mate, is just...
Yeah.
You know, from the intro, you know, the Atom Dragon theme that plays in the kind of the intro sequence. You've got, you know, Behold the Precious Wings or Ecce Velde Generis Alley, which is haunting. And then my favourite is the Son of Me Areru Ex Ancitu, which is just my favourite piece of music in the whole game.
Yeah.
It's haunting, beautiful, mesmerising music. It's an amazing game. I'm not a big fan of RPGs. I don't have the attention span for them. But Panzer Dragoon Saga, merging the whole Panzer Dragoon lore, that battle system, the open world wasn't too big to be daunting. It was just nice enough to explore the kind of little, not so much puzzle elements, but like going to visit Payet and going to get the machine parts and stuff like that, yeah. You know. So just wee things like that. It was a nice RPG to play, you know, because it merged enough action and storytelling, but it wasn't like... Was it like with Final Fantasy VII? The random battles was just too overwhelming, but I always felt Panzer Dragoon Saga did a really good job of just pacing its battles out really well. So it's a brilliant game. Absolutely love it.
Ticks all the boxes. It's visually compelling. The soundtrack, as you've absolutely nailed there, it's amazing, and it complements the game perfectly and really kind of enhances the whole experience of the whole atmosphere and vibe of and aura of the whole world. But yeah, it does. It's a svelte 20 hours. It's not a massive RPG, yeah, but it still does pretty basically everything. It's four discs. There's plenty to explore, and there's loads of secrets in there as well. You've got to find all the dragon parts, the D01 to D12, and then you find the hidden ruins, and then you've got to kind of solve the puzzle in there to get the hidden dragon form and everything. So there's so much in there, and then at the end you kind of get a rating that will tell you, well, this was your average battle rating, and this is how much of the map you've explored. So it makes you go again, and you can get, like, you've got the battles, and if you've obviously you can go around and churn all the kind of the random battles as much as you want to get until you get kind of that great battle, or excellent is the highest rating.
Right.
But obviously you only get one crack at the boss. So you guys have to save and restart or wait till you go through the game all again if you wanted to get 100% on excellent ratings across everything. So there's so much, there's a lot there, even though it's not the biggest RPG. But, you know, if you're not a fan of RPGs, it's not a big one. It's not one that's going to take too much of your time. It's not one that's going to tell you to walk 5 minutes and get an explanation of how to attack someone and walk another 5 minutes and get a slightly deeper explanation of how you're going to attack someone. It just gives you the tools from the off and away you go. And there's just an awful lot to it, mate. So, yeah, it's one of those uniquely Saturn games. You know, it's got that Saturn feel about it that you don't get anywhere else. And it's just another phenomenal game and one that's very personal to me.
Yeah. And anybody watching this or listening to this who has a Saturn and maybe collects physical games and wants to play this and is out of their reach, get a Saru and put it on an SD card and just enjoy it. And see any of these. And these are gatekeepers. Maybe people who are collectors who have got the actual physical copy because they've paid through the nose for it, and they go on about using ODEs and piracy and how dare you. This stuff is abandonware, right? It's, if you don't put it on an SD card and play it, you're never going to, unless you can have pockets deep enough to buy it. And I don't think the game deserves to not be seen by as many eyes as possible. So if you're one of these folks who's maybe sat on the fence about a Saru, it's the most cost-effective way and non-destructive way to your Saturn to experience it. Do yourself a favour, drop the piracy pish and go and play it. It's you deserve to experience it. Don't lock yourself out behind some weird moral compass about piracy. These games are abandoned. Well, if you don't play them on these ODEs that we've been lucky enough to be given the chance to you know, buy at this point in time in the retro community, then you're never going to. So play it.
That £500-700 that you're paying, it's not going to Sega. They don't see any of it.
Exactly.
They got their £40 back in the day, and then they never see anything. They never saw anything since.
No, Team Andromeda's not going to see a penny of it. It's not going to go to the developers. It's going to go to some collector, try to be polite, sitting, you know, in the room, counting the money you're giving them for a copy of a game that they've sat on a shelf for years, or we paid less for decades ago, and are profiting off it. So, nah.
It's like the copy of Golden Axe, mate, that's sitting on eBay for £63. That's got a £1.99 GameStation sticker on. Sega got there, whatever they sold it for, £20 to £40, whoever bought it originally. They took it to GameStation. GameStation probably gave them 50p. They sold it for £1.99 to this guy, and this guy's trying to make an extra £63 on top of it. So it's like, Sega aren't seeing that money. So, yeah. People just don't worry about the piracy when it comes to Panzer Dragoon Saga. And if it does come out, and if they do ever remaster it, whether it's Forever Entertainment, and maybe they'll butcher it, or if Sega actually do something with it, you know, give them the money that way. You know, it's a lot like Golden Axe. You know, I've got my secondhand copy coming from Japan, but I've always bought, whether it was the Golden Axe arcade version on Xbox Live Arcade or the vintage collection with the free games in. Yeah. I think that Sega had delisted them all now, so which makes it
worse.
Sega, I'm trying to give you money.
That's the thing. We want to give them money for these games. Like, again, Scud Race, Daytona 2. In fact, see all your games in Yakuza, right? Don't just hide them in Yakuza. Put them on a collection. Like, call it like the arcade collection and release it. There are people who would buy just the arcade ports on their own. Like,
yeah.
People want to give you money, Sega, for Christ's sake. Only company in the world that wants money but doesn't want to actually put the revenue streams out there for people to use. Honestly.
Sega all over, mate.
That's it.
Yeah, but that's Panzer Dragoon Saga, mate. So what's your number four?
Number four, I am going for, again, a personal memory from back in the importing days. This was one that I coveted a lot.
Oh, look at that.
Yeah. X-Men versus Street Fighter. The game that Rich Ledbetter told us all we had to chip and switch our Saturns to get, or one of them, but one of the main ones. So this has been resealed by the seller on, what was it, Mercari via Sendico, but this is immaculate. I'm going to mute my microphone while I unpack.
Yeah, but the thing is, they say that these games are, they sell them as junk, untested, poor condition. The copy of Darius that you got, mate, was an absolute joke.
Mate, poor condition was at £5.63. It's not got a mark on it. It's immaculate.
Yeah.
Poor condition. Mate, that would be mint over here, right?
Yeah.
But aye, so this is absolutely immaculate. Again, just don't want to fold the cardboard too much. But obviously, I'm kind of cheating a wee bit here because there's a peripheral in here, but you need it, so we'll see.
Hey, I had the 3D pad, mate.
Well, true. So you get the 4 megabyte RAM cart. This one works first time, like fully inserted into my PAL Saturn that 60 hertz switched and my white Japanese one. The cartridge, again, the 4 megabyte cartridge that I've had for years, you have to put it in and lift it up a wee bit, and that's the same on both. So it's the cartridge that's the pins, but this one just works like first time. But again, you get the lovely, again, look, you get that was
that
standard.
That one hasn't
got
back, yeah.
Aye, so that's the standard for that. But again, just everything about it, mate, it's just an immaculate copy. So that was the first game whenever I started to import. That was my go-to. I went, I need to get X-Men versus Street Fighter. So I think this one cost me, on Sendico, it was £23. At that point, it was one of the most expensive Sendico purchases at that time. That has now been eclipsed. So, but aye, I say, just that's why it's got that kind of special meaning. I know there's a lot of other kind of 2D Capcom games. Obviously, Marvel Superheroes versus Street Fighter, Vampire Savior. Obviously, you get the Street Fighter Zero 3, which is really expensive. And you've got the non-4 megabyte RAM card games as well. Obviously, you get your Street Fighter Zero, Zero 2, Cyberbots, which can work with or without either the 1 or the 4 megabyte card. But this just epitomizes like 2D fighting games on Saturn for me. It's just that's the go-to, and I just love the cover art on it. Again, just the comic book artwork. Every character just looks utterly phenomenal on there, and as a package, I think it's just beautiful. So, aye, mate. Again, not the most expensive to replace, but because it's got that memory up there of being that first Japanese Saturn game that, when I finally started importing again and the means to do it, you know, direct for Japan and through eBay, you know, what was it, EMS shipping was the old one.
Isn't that who Gary and James work for in House of the Dead 2?
Is it?
Or is it AMS?
It's EMS, they dogs of the AMS. Time to make a move. Every deep voice that I try and do comes out sounding like Prime. It's no, it's really no meant to. It's like, say that to you in WhatsApp. It's like, oh, but aye, so that's that, mate. I say, just because it's got that attachment to it, that was when I imported my first kind of VAO grey Mark One Japanese Saturn. I was like, I need to get X-Men versus Street Fighter. So aye, that's my favourite Capcom 4 megabyte RAM card game, and chuffed to have that in that condition. So that would be 100% kept.
Awesome, mate. I mean, that one, X-Men versus Street Fighter, is a game I absolutely adore, and the Sega Saturn version especially is extremely, extremely close to my heart. It was the game, yeah. It made me and my friend Charlie convert our Saturns to pick it up. You know, it was the catalyst. It was that game was the tipping point, because it was even on release schedules over in the UK. It was like it was on the Sega Saturn magazine. It's incoming.
Sweet, eh?
I mean, right. 97, and it never did, obviously. Because we've got King of Fighters 95 over here, which gave us hope. But yeah, obviously, X-Men versus Street Fighter. But for me, it's one of the best versus games there is. It's one that's not too over the top, but by the same token, it's the most experimental one. but they just kind of thought, well, we'll plonk Street Fighters in the kind of the X-Men Children of the Atom engine, make it a tag battle game and just have at it. And it's just kind of unbound and it's just so much fun. Whereas Marvel Superheroes versus Street Fighter, despite being an upgrade, kind of fixes some of the craziness that X-Men versus Street Fighter does. Aye. And then you've got the fact that Marvel Superheroes versus Street Fighter all had existing characters that had been in previous games, except for Norimaro. Whereas X-Men versus Street Fighter, you had new characters in Gambit and Sabretooth. And Sabretooth, I don't think he's been in anything else except for MVC2. Gambit was obviously in Marvel Combat, but Marvel versus Capcom. But yeah, I love Sabretooth because he's got the voice actor from the X-Men animated series.
Ah, right.
And he's, you know, he flies across the game, Berserker Claw! Berserker Claw! Mayday! Yes, boss! It's absolutely fantastic. Yeah, so I adore that game. And obviously, you can play it. I used some, used my reward points to get Xbox vouchers and ended up getting... This was actually the first time I tried getting Final Fantasy VII Remake, actually. I put changed up enough points for £25 worth of vouchers. And by the time Xbox had processed it, Remake had gone off sale. So I thought, I need to use these in 3 months. So I ended up buying Marvel vs. Capcom Collection.
Right.
Really good. Great collection. Loads of great little extras on there. But they are just kind of the arcade ports with a few bells and whistles. Whereas, well, they're not even arcade ports. They're arcade emulation. Good of a bit, which is, you know, the Sega Saturn is the Sega Saturn version, and it's the only console port there ever really was. You can't really count the PlayStation version because it's basically a different game.
That's borked.
no tag mode.
It's not even the same game. Even the same league. Even the same fucking sport. Foot massage don't mean shit.
Exactly.
You ever given a man a foot massage? A Pulp Fiction there for folk? There you go.
I'm the X-Men versus Street Fighter master. Got my technique down and everything.
The key continues.
It's superb. Absolutely superb fighting game. And you're on a console like the Saturn, where there's so many good fighting games, that's still one of the very best. I'm a bit of a purist because I love Street Fighter Alpha 2 over Alpha 3. But yeah, I think it's X-Men versus Street Fighter is just, it gets the level of craziness right. One of the best in the series for me.
Absolutely, mate. So, yep, that one would be kept.
Yeah.
And the final games, mate. What have you got?
Final game. To the surprise of nobody, Sonic the Hedgehog 2 makes an appearance. My favourite game of all time. And, this is another game that's common. It's sold, 8 million copies worldwide? I could get a copy, the Mega Drive, I could even get the Sega Genesis copy. It's not got any region locking on it. Why would I want to keep this PAL copy? This one's not actually even my childhood copy, or at least the box isn't. This box got used so much that the vinyl came off. I don't think the manual was the original. The manual is not the original because the manual got opened up and read so many times. Ultimately, I had to replace both of those. The cartridge is original, though. The cartridge is my original one from Christmas 1992. But yeah, it's, I could go on forever about how much I love this game. It's kind of the perfection of the Sonic the Hedgehog formula. Sonic the Hedgehog, like the original one, and I've just kind of done a video on it, which might probably be out by the time this goes out. But, you know, it's an amazing, absolutely incredible game, and I've grown and got a lot more appreciation for it as kind of years have gone on, because it's an absolutely incredible game. But you don't have kind of a Sonic identity then. You've got six zones which are all fundamentally quite different and challenge you in different ways. And I don't think Sonic's trying to be the best Sonic game, because it was the first Sonic game. It's just trying to be the best game. Whereas Sonic the Hedgehog 2 is like, what is Sonic all about? Let's perfect that. And obviously you went a little bit more kind of exploration-based with Sonic CD and Sonic 3 and Knuckles. But Sonic 2, you got the exploration if you want it. The levels are fairly vast, and I don't think they get enough kind of appreciation for how big they are. Because I was playing it on Sonic Origins Collection the other day, which I'll come back to in a minute. And, you know, I thought, you know what, I'll see if I can get all the emeralds in Green Hills, in Emerald Hill Zone, and get Supersonic right at the very first level. And I could, but there's just kind of that exploration if you wanted to do that. I love the fact that you can go into special stages at the star post rather than kind of look for the hunt for the big rings or have to wait until you get to the end of the zone like the first Sonic CD and Sonic 1. It's just it lets you play it how you want to, and it's the game that really does embrace the way that Sonic's speed moves, and it's just kind of all the kind of interstitial little movement based puzzles, whether it's rolling up onto a ball in the loop on Hilltop Zone, which I was stuck on for about a week when I was a kid. I was like, are you meant to get past this stupid loop? And then you have to roll into the ball. So it kind of teaches you that you have to do that. Whereas on Sonic 1, they're just kind of tools that you have. It doesn't necessarily mean you have to use them. Same with Metropolis Zone and jumping off the wall to get through to the exit. So it's just all these tiny little things like that. It just always up to just an absolute video game perfection in my eyes. Why keep the Mega Drive version? Because no other version's as good. maybe the 3DS version is pretty cool with the 3D, but then you can't own that physically apart from the Japanese version, I think. But yeah, so you can't own that physically. Origins is a bit of a mess, I'm not gonna lie. Because it lets you, it's just stupid things. It lets you keep your rings after the special stage, so you don't even have to kind of hunt for your rings again to go back into the special stage if you wanted to go into the same one again. So it just makes things, it just dilutes the experience a little bit, adds all these extra sound effects and stuff. It just feels out of place. Yeah, the Origins collection isn't great. And obviously Sonic Jam on the Sega Saturn, there's loads of slowdown in that on Sonic 2 for some reason. The emulated versions all have issues, so you basically just come back to saying, right, get the original Mega Drive version and just stick it in. So that's what I do, mate. I couldn't be without that game. I've played it twice already this year, so no doubt I'll play it again. I've got to play it again anyway, because I need to wash that Origins version out of my mouth.
That's it, mate. I mean, just give yourself a reason to play. That's it.
Yeah.
I knew Sonic 2 would be where you finished up. That was like a natural finishing point, but that's understandable, mate. It's your favorite game of all time.
Yes, I've got the one and two favorite games of all time, and not there for anything other than the fact that they mean so much to me from a game perspective, which I think ties in with probably your final pick as well.
It does, mate. So you went with your favorite game. Where else am I going to finish? That's why I was laughing when you said, you know, you have to finish off your favourite game. Right. I had originally brought that version, but that'll be... Why am I doing that? I've got the PAL version. So, of course, aye.
Because I bought that one. I got that version out.
Aye.
And then there's that version. And, of course, that version. Or that version.
You can play it with the mountain.
You can play it without the mountain.
That's it. Remember, Mel? It's foil. We've got foil. Remember? But aye. No, mate. So, where else to finish? But Sega Rally. And it would have to be the PAL version. Man, the memories. I can still remember sitting on the train home from Glasgow Queen Street to West Upton Station to my uncle's house in Knightswood, with this case, not this exact copy, but that a version of that, after getting it in Beatty's in St. Enoch Square, which went on to become a Maplin's, then went on to become a Rangers store, and I have no idea what it is now, but that's what the various retailers who have taken up the mantle since Beatty's. But where do you start with Sega Rally, mate? There's nothing more I can really add that people that watch this channel regularly don't know. Favourite game ever, game that I've put so much time into that I've just mastered, you know, every turn, every twist, turn, bend, track, bit of terrain, everything about it. I could play it in my sleep. I could play it with my eyes closed, possibly even going by the music. There's a challenge. There's a video. Can James play Sega Rally going by just the music? That'd be fun. Using the music as a guide to take the bends. But it's just I'll just love it, mate. It's just I could not be without a copy of Sega Rally. Like, I've got the Japanese plus, I've got normal Japanese version. I think Sam's copy is the later PAL release that came in the plastic case. I think you've got that one there. The ones that you sit there and go, you got 4 hours to try and open.
Damn it, open!
Sam, you said these cases would light our Saturn's disk drive up. It's like, the amount of times I used to watch Sam open up Steep Slope Sliders or Sonic R and the disc went flying across the room.
Oh, God, I was going to say. I think it was like Fighters Megamix and stuff. I'd be like...
That's right. Duke Nukem 3D, Quake. Winter Heat.
Yeah.
Disc across the room.
It's like someone said... Do you know what, Sega? These PAL cases, they open a little bit too easy. There's no latch on them, so they kind of come open a little bit. So yeah, you try and open it now. Why don't you try and open this one now?
That's what we'll do. We'll stick on a nice big fucking latch on there, and we'll see if you can get that open. Then, eh?
Just bought a game, have you? Yeah, try and play it. Try and open it.
You'll get to play it 3 weeks later. How many people must have taken like a flathead screwdriver or a blunt kind of knife like, for the kitchen to this to try and get into the clip to open it? Because, mate, when they were brand new, they were absolutely lethal. So at least they proved the fact that they did make more solid cases, you know what I mean? So they fixed it, just a bit late in the system's life, but aye, mate, so Sega Rally. 100%. So that's my five. Sega Rally, X-Men versus Street Fighter, Crazy Taxi, Panzer Dragoon, and Virtua Fighter 3 TB.
And what a selection, mate. Yeah, and for me, it's Sonic 8-Bit, Sonic 2, Panzer Dragoon Saga, Radiant Silver Gun, and Nights into Dreams. And that'll do me. I could play those games for all eternity. I play them more than anything else now. There's plenty more that I regularly in my rotation, but they're definitely the ones that I couldn't be without physical copies of, you know, for various reasons.
And if God forbid we both had to sell the collections, we just go to each other's house. We've got 10 connecting games to play between us. But that'd be fun, mate. I think I could do a round two of this quite easily. You know what I mean? So if that's something that people are interested in, if you've enjoyed this, you can let us know in the comments. We'll certainly consider doing it in the future.
Yeah. Yeah, or a variation of the theme. You got to sell everything except for one console.
Mm-hmm. That's it, aye. Because the systems are... So the startups of Dreamcast are kind of easy enough to come by. It's just the games that make the money these days. Although the systems are creeping up, but in the main, it's the games that are just obviously the recondition and rarity, and you know, obviously with Panzer Dragoon Saga, that is what pushes the rarity up. The fact that Stoller somehow greenlit a Western release, but gave us a paltry number of copies.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Printed an absolute paltry number. So it's that rarity, that lack of actual copies out there that drives the price up. So
yeah. Yeah, I do see that. I do see Dreamcast especially is really creeping up, like consoles. I don't know if it's because the bloody things break all the time.
Many times I talk to Tom Charnock and what's happening, he sends me pictures of his Dreamcasts like being donors for other Dreamcasts. I mean, that's why it's called the Dreamcast Junkyard, because his room literally was a junkyard for Dreamcast at the stack. His loft still is. Like, you don't need a spare part for your Dreamcast, reach out to Tom. It's like a graveyard of Dreamcasts up in his loft.
Yeah,
he's just getting bits and pieces of different systems, and he's always using systems as donors for his main systems and stuff. It's just Like, I know, I think, was it Mikowski in the Discord was saying that he's never had any issues with his, and a Japanese one that I bought off a Tom Thumb, like, runs like a champ, but nah. See, whenever they decide to not work, mate, they're just like, nah, nah. You can play this game next week when I decide to work again.
Well, that's like my, my Japanese ones, like my original Japanese one is the one that goes on the strongest, but even that lately is like, got that copy of Jet Set Radio, and it was just like, got to the Jet Set Radio, hey, 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 it's Professor K. You, boop, boop, boom, 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 boom. I was like, oh, for goodness sake.
I am sure you said, for goodness sake. Tell us what you really think. Oh, God. But again, thank God we've got ODEs.
Yeah, indeed, mate, indeed. So I suppose we'll put it over to kind of listeners, viewers, Discord members. Let us know what your five games that you'd retain. If you had to get rid of everything but five games, what would be the ones that you keep? You know, and why? You know, is it because they're special, or is it because they're valuable? Yeah, let us know in the comments on the Discord or wherever the discussion is happening. Just get in touch and let us know what you think. If you're watching on YouTube, if you enjoyed this video, give us a like and a subscribe, because that really helps the channel. We're nearly at 18,000 subscribers. Absolutely insane. It'd be amazing to get to 20,000 before the end of the year. And if you want to be extra mega, think about becoming a Sega Guys YouTube channel member with a bunch of awesome perks with our Akira All Access members, getting their names read out as a thank you right now.
Certainly, our Akira All Access members for today's show, we have G-Man, Stiff Peak, I Am Mikowski, Craig Williamson, Resident SD, P-Wall, Peter 007, Nick Tullock 1882, Greg Matthews, Tom Thumb, Kaiju Leviathan, David Owens, Drickass Zero, Pablo Plays 98, Sancho 0813, Silver Spear 21, Schnappleur, and we have Luke Thorpe 2153. So thank you very much to all our members and subscribers for your continued support. And I'm just laughing here because, as per usual, somebody when I'm on camera wants to come on. So, you go on the podcast eventually, didn't you, you daft dog?
Bless her.
But yes, so 18,000 members, mate. Well, our subscribers, sorry, we're almost there. I think 20k by the end of the year is totally doable. So thank you to everyone for their continued support of the channel.
Yeah, absolutely. So whether it's sharing, liking, subscribing, or even just being here with us and sharing Sega love, we appreciate you and we appreciate your support. So until next time, we will see you on the Sega side.
Sega!